This is The Illusionist, in which I, Helen Saltzman, spot a very glamorously dressed language eating a breakfast pastry outside a well-known jewellery store. Today's episode is about anachronism. Well, really, anachronisms that are not actually anachronisms. So, anachronisant? Yay! Glad to have curdled your linguistic milk straight out of the fridge. Just a reminder, there are transcripts for each episode, including this one, at theillusionist.org/transcripts. Also on the show's website, there are links about every episode's topic and event listings. People in Australia, keep an eye on those, because I'm coming your way in July. More soon. On with the show. This episode is about a phenomenon called the Tiffany problem. And I just want to emphasize to any and all listeners called Tiffany, you are not the problem. It's not your fault. It's not you. It's everyone else.
And I said, what is the problem with Tiffany? They said, is if you call a character that in a historical novel or period piece, because people won't believe that that name is old.
The phrase the Tiffany problem was coined by the science fiction and fantasy author Jo Walton. Here she is.
I wanted to talk about this problem that is the Tiffany problem. Tiffany is a name that sounds to us modern. It sounds like a modern name. It does not sound like an old-fashioned name. It doesn't ring in our ears as authentically old. Even though it is 12th century and attested in English and French documents back to the 12th century.
It's true, Tiffany was quite a common name in medieval English and French. It means the appearance of God, and it was often given to babies born on the 6th of January, the Christian festival Epiphany, because Tiffany was an anglicisation and gallicisation of another name for Epiphany, Theophania.
Which does sound authentically old, right?
Mm.
Theophania sounds like an old name, but Tiffany totally doesn't. It doesn't sound like a name that you could give a character in a historical novel.
Whoa, Tiffany, a such a modern girl, singing and dancing around the shopping mall.
What we, the readers, know about the name Tiffany is incorrect. But nevertheless, as a writer, you cannot use the name Tiffany.
What made you choose the name Tiffany specifically for the Tiffany problem? Because there are other names that people tend to think of as modern that are actually old, like Samantha, Gary, Chad.
Yeah. I just came across this Tiffany Theophania thing. Something I was reading ages and ages ago, like decades ago. So it was sort of in my mind. And when I started thinking about this as a problem, it just sort of came to mind and encapsulated it. It might be that Gary was a name of kids that I was in school with, whereas Tiffany wasn't. It seemed more modern than that and sort of American.
Mm.
It did not seem like even a name of my childhood when I ran across it. So it was anomalous in that way. Anyway, I think it's a good name for it. I think it's nice to have some things called after women.
When you're creating a fictional world and you want to include something that you know is historically accurate, but you don't want to get bogged down in having to explain to the listener that actually, yes, this is historically accurate, they can believe it. How do you handle that?
Sometimes I know that it's going to be a problem that people won't know about it because I didn't know about it before I started zooming in on that period. And this is a wide problem with writing historical fiction or writing things set in history, because for me it's usually fantasy in some way, but writing things that are informed by history, writing things that are set in real history or something that feels like real history. It's not just names. There's all kinds of things.
In days of yore, Vikings wore brightly coloured stripy trousers, T-Rexes didn't walk upright, Greek and Roman statues were vividly coloured. In days of yore, no, everyone was not heterosexual, cisgender or white. In days of yore, people ate ice cream and used singular they and said like in the ways that annoy people today. In days of yore, there were batteries, multi-story apartment buildings, air conditioning and central heating, syringes, spectacles, vending machines.
So you can have a character called Tiffany, but you've really got to put a lot of effort into it. Because the reader will not be picturing, the reader will be pulled out of the story by Tiffany.
Where a concept or character might come across as anachronistic, even if it isn't, Jo Walton will be very careful how she sets that up, or she'll get the characters she's writing to do it, put the problem into their mouths.
You can have characters as a conversation about an aspect of something that's broken. And during that, they will learn about the thing that's broken as a thing, so that they'll accept it. That's one sort of simple technique for dealing with that. Or I won't use it. Sometimes I will decide, damn, I would love to have this character called Tiffany, but I can't. And I'll call her Helena or something else because I just can't do it for a modern reader.
But that just perpetuates the Tiffany problem because Tiffanys don't get represented in these historical contexts, so they stay modern in people's minds.
Mostly been able to get away with it by setting it up and doing it. But you've got to know, you've got to be aware that there is this Tiffany barrier there in people's minds where you've got to break it down slowly because people just won't believe it.
There's so many things to consider when you're naming characters in fiction.
Does this sound authentic? How does this pull? What does it seem like class-wise? What abbreviations of these names would people the age of your younger brothers and sisters use? Because you really have to get that stuff right. Well, you don't have to. You can just screw it up. But it's better if you get it right.
If you're writing modern children, are you giving them contemporary kids' names or are you using the names that were common kid names in your own childhood? More likely the latter, Jo Walton reckons.
People writing books with kids in are inclined to give the kids names that kids had when they were that age.
Which might be anachronistic given how naming trends of the author's childhood may not be those of the era when their book is set. For additional confusion, consider how in the first couple of decades of the 21st century, there has been a trend to revive older sounding names, names that were popular 100 years before, like Archie and Beatrix and Olive and Mabel. Names that in a novel you would accept for a character born in the early 1900s, but maybe not for one born in the 1980s. But for a futuristic novel set, say, in the 2040s, would that resonate for a reader in our current era, the early 2020s?
Think about it a lot when I am writing, and particularly when I'm writing things set in the future. I've got one story where the great-grandmother is called Brittany, and the people of the parent generation are called Walter and Maud because that's the kind of thing that's going to happen.
Hey, maybe many, many years from now, archaeologists will dig up a small, pale blue Tiffany box, and after some time studying the other documentation they've unearthed, historians deduce that the box came from a place that sells breakfast. Tiffany is an old name, as aforementioned, but after its period of medieval popularity, it wasn't all that common as a first name until the latter part of the 20th century. It was around as a last name all that time, though, and variants like Tiffin and Tiffane. The actor Richard Tiffany Gere, also known as Richard Gere, has that middle name from his mother's last name. As a last name, Tiffany became famous as the jewellery business, named after its founder, Charles Louis Tiffany, who opened up shop in New York in 1837, selling stationery and fancy goods. If you want to credit Tiffany Fancy Goods for the revival of Tiffany as a first name, I think you do have a case.
That business is the titular Tiffany in the novella and film Breakfast at Tiffany's. Film was released in 1961.
And in 1962, Tiffany enters the top 1,000 American female baby names. Although, it's a slow rise. It doesn't enter the top 100 till 1970, and not the top 20 till 1980. It remains there for most of the decade, remains fairly popular through the 90s, though by the end it slides gradually back down towards the hundreds again. In Australia, France and the UK, it also crested in popularity in the 1980s and 90s.
In 2021, Tiffany was the 864th most popular female name in the USA, with 315 new Tiffanys being registered. Unfortunately, I'm not able to get comparable data for naming trends in the 13th century.
Any depiction of history has been editorialised with the standards of the time of the depiction.
But it's things that fit with the prejudices. The more it fits the prejudices, the more that people will believe it. And so to a certain extent, the worse things are, people have this belief, this prejudice, that history was terrible. And in many ways, it was terrible, but it's good things that they often have a hard time believing.
Do you think people have to believe without actual evidence that we're better humans than long dead ones, that there's linear progress?
It could be that. It could well be that. I think that some people do want to believe that there is simplistic progress and that we are the best ever. And other people want to believe the opposite, that we're the worst ever. But either one of those answers fits with the way that people tell stories. It fits with people's prejudices and beliefs. Either we are the best or we are the worst. Whereas it's really complicated and fractal. And we're much better on some things and much worse on other things.
We're not saying that everything in fiction has to be real, and much of Jo Walton's work is not set in the real world, but in fantasy worlds. But the reader has to believe it and not be jolted by details that seem jarring. For example, how nearly all the cowboys in American film have been white, but actually a large number in the 19th century were Mexican, Black, and Native American. When the jolt comes from disparities between historical fact and common perceptions of the past, that shouldn't be avoided.
I sometimes talk about this as it's rolling the ball uphill. It's very easy to roll a ball downhill. The ball wants to go downhill and gather momentum. And there's always a way of telling a story that is rolling the ball downhill. But sometimes when you're talking about history and the complexities of history in human society, you're really rolling it uphill. And you've got to make extra effort to get it uphill and to get people to go along with you. When if you do the downhill story, I'm not very interested in downhill stories, even when they're not lies, because they're kind of boring. But the uphill stories take more work. And whether that's the true story of history or the fictional stories that I'm writing novels about, it's always kind of a bit uphill.
Whoa, Tiffany, you're older than you look, but I can't call it Grandma Tiffany if I write a book. No, 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 Tiffany, yo, Tiffany, go.
Jo Walton is a science fiction and fantasy writer, and you can find her novels, poetry, plays, essays, recipes, and the dates of her upcoming appearances at jowaltonbooks.com. The Illusionist is an independent podcast kept going by the generous patrons at patreon.com/illusionist, who, in return for their largesse, receive behind-the-scenes intel about the show, regular live streams, and their own Discord community, wherein the other day I asked people if they could think of examples of the Tiffany problem, and Eric cited unfriend. Turns out that word has been around long before social media, as a verb in the 1600s, as a noun from the 1200s, meaning an enemy. No enemies in the Illusiverse, just friends. Join us at patreon.com/illusionist. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is fleer, verb, poetic or literary. Laugh impudently or jeeringly. Noun, archaic, an impudent or jeering look or speech. Try using fleer in an email today. This episode was written and produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, thanks to Erin Wade. The original music was composed, played and sung by Martin Austwick of palebirdmusic.com and the podcasts Song by Song and Neutrino Watch. Our ad partner is Multitude. To sponsor an episode of The Illusionist, contact them at multitude.productions/ads. Stay in touch with me at Illusionist Show on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. And to hear or read every episode, get more information about the topics and guests therein, see the full dictionary entries for all the randomly selected words, browse a lexicon of all the words ever covered in the show so you can listen to the relevant episode about it, and for event listings for upcoming live performances, visit the show's forever home, theillusionist.org.